Oh, I have a hip-hop coloring book that my mother, Sora, got for her. It's called Hip-Hop Coloring Book, From the Creators and Evolution of the B-Boy.
Okay, all right.
It has Spinderella, the Fugees.
Okay. All right, Jackie. Okay, Jackie. Let's start.
The way you speak to me.
Hey y'all, I'm Dalia.
And I'm Jackie, and welcome to the To and Fro podcast.
First episode. Whoop whoop.
Not only are we two girls on a podcast with fros, but we also, you know, kind of have a to and fro moment. So a to and fro moment can be a realization or a lesson. To is where you were and fro is where you are. And it just kind of represents our constant movement and constant evolution that we experience throughout our different walks of life.
Speak it, Sister Carter, speak it. And we're two gorgeous Black women from Texas, one from Deep East Texas, the backwoods, and one from suburban Houston. Just really telling y'all what's on our minds and just kind of addressing some of the questions we have. So if you want deep intellectual combos with no foolishness, this ain't it.
Definitely. So right now I'm in Houston, H-Town. And where are you at, Dalia?
I am in Austin. And Jackie, what are you doing with your life in Houston?
I am working for an apartment complex group, being a marketing assistant.
Hey, and I am a reporter and host at Austin's NPR station. So, you know, we really are here trying to make it.
Basically. So Dalia and I are always talking about how people make fun of our accents, which you necessarily may not hear right now. We don't even hear them ourselves, but, you know, you might not hear it because technically we're in broadcast mode. But whenever we go out of town or in new spaces and meet different people, despite our appearance, the way we speak is quickly picked up.
And we also talked about how this is not only something we deal with as Southerners, but as Black people too. You know, we realize that there are different challenges when it comes to accents and dialects, but we wanted to specifically look into Southern dialect and how that relates to our identity as Black people. So we hope you enjoy this beautiful layered cake of a self-identity and Southern drawl.
Hey there, you.
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 Listening to this podcast right now. Do you ever find yourself not only speaking with African American vernacular,
but also having a little twang to it?
Do you find yourself using the habitual Is the S inflection absent on your speech? Do you say ain't, y'all, or fixin' to? Let me repeat that.
Do you say ain't, y'all, or fixin' to?
Are you even sometimes constantly made fun of when you go back home for talking white or uppity? Well, we here at To and Fro Enterprises have a solution for you.
There isn't one.
Because the way you talk is just fine.
So I recently talked to Dr. Sanja Lane Hart. She's a professor at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and she specializes in African-American language and sociolinguistics. She wrote a book called Sister Speak, Black Women Kinfolk Talk About Language and Literacy. And in her book, which is absolutely amazing and I recommend, she wrote about how proper English has an effect on language, literacy, educational achievement, and self-image. So... but it's really weird because it's not really from the point of view of anybody she doesn't know. It's from her own point of view and her grandmother, aunt, mother, and sister, who are from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we really, really just chop it up.
So speaker, and then I'm assuming this is volume. Maybe not. Okay, anyway.
All right. And like you said, you know, you're trying to kind of change... you're trying to kind of change, I guess, these thoughts and these concepts about African-American vernacular and just, you know, embrace your culture. But what's the importance of actually embracing that?
I think the importance of it is realizing that there's variation in our histories and our cultures, and it's not about something being good or bad. It's about things that are just being different. So one of the reasons it's of concern to me is that when you start telling people that your language is bad and you should speak a different way and this isn't, you know, you should give this up, is you're really telling them that they're bad, you know, that who they are isn't good and they need to do something different. And that just leads to a lot of different issues, especially if we're looking at students in classrooms. You're talking about kids who are coming into classrooms with their own languages. They already know how to use language. Their speaking is fine. And they go into a classroom and someone starts telling them, you know, that's poor language, that's bad language, it's home language. And it's offensive to you as a person. And you take that to heart as a person. And that's when students start shutting down in classrooms, because it becomes easier not to speak than to speak. And so it has detrimental effects across the board for individuals when you take a perspective that there's a right way and a wrong way to how you speak, or a bad way and a good way to how you speak, and then you're effectively shutting off other opportunities.
So I can definitely agree with Dr. Lanehart said on a personal level. You know, I think both of us being Black women from the South with accents, we're constantly under a microscope and we're constantly criticized and, you know, when we don't speak in proper English.
Yes, all of the time. I know that whenever I was growing up, I tried my best to kind of blend in with especially a lot of the white kids to make sure that I didn't sound like I was Black when, I mean, that's kind of weird, right? Because, I mean, it's not obvious at all.
I was around a lot of Black people, but I did, I was in speech when I was younger.
Yeah.
And so I used to do speech competitions. And in order to, you know, win, I had to be like, hi.
Like, very articulate.
In order to win, I would be like, Still I Rise by Maya Angelou.
All right. So you were
extra.
That was
the poem I did.
You were extra. This ain't even got nothing to do with language. You just extra. Anyway. Anyway. During our conversation, she even talks about how that in itself is a type of discrimination whenever, you know, people do judge the way that you speak or articulate words in certain contexts.
You can't really disconnect African-American language from the people who use it and speak it and who have birthed it. And so it's not about the language specifically. It's about the people who use the language. This is just one of many things that are used against African-Americans or used in ways to sort of not providing access and not sort of denying equity and equality for African-Americans. In the same way, I don't think how African-American language is discriminated against is any different than skin color, you know. The difference between why lighter-skinned Blacks have more opportunities than darker-skinned Blacks, right? Or why people with so-called good hair are seen as more acceptable than people with so-called bad hair, right? Mm-hmm. So I think all of those things are just representative of the larger picture, which is Blackness is seen as bad.
So then after this part of the conversation of how judging this type of dialect is sort of discriminatory, we go into code switching, which in this context means for us that we try to go from sounding like Black, beautiful, queens, you know, astounding, you know, stallion-esque, Black country girls, and we try to speak what's perceived as proper English. And my question for you is, you know, do you ever feel the need to have to do this all of the time? Like when compared to when you were younger and now, do you find yourself doing it more?
I feel like I do it even more. And I probably did it when I was younger as well, but I wasn't more aware of what it actually was. But now if I want to get a job or if I'm talking on the phone to a customer service representative, I have to put on this certain voice, a certain persona so that I'm taken more seriously and I sound more educated. And I feel like if I didn't do that in my interviews, I would be deemed as less intelligent. What about you?
Yeah, I feel like I do that a lot more. When I was younger, I remember that I used to get so upset at my mother for doing that on the phone, right? So, like, one moment she'd be talking to us, you know, just, like, speaking to us like we're her family. Mm-hmm. And then after that, she would get on the phone, hello, hi, how can I help you? And I remember one time I asked her in the car, and you know, you're not supposed to ever question
not a
Black
all.
Mother.
Not at all.
I don't know what I was thinking, but I was just like, Mama, why when you talk on the phone do you sound white? And then when you talk to us, you sound differently. And I remember she fussed at me and said, no, I don't. You know, she got offended because I even, you know, picked that out. So I think that was one of the first times that, but at the time, you know, there really wasn't a name for it. That was one of the first times that I realized that my mother was code switching. And as, you know, as children, kind of observing that, that's a learned quality.
Definitely. Definitely. I do the same thing when I pick up the phone. My mom now, when my mom talks in her voice, she actually gets a slight lisp and it's actually funny to me.
Oh my
gosh. But when she picks up the phone, she's automatic, this is Diane. Like, you know, and it's just something that I have picked up because I'm like, oh, this is what I have to do when I get on the phone, you know?
Exactly.
So I do code switch and I have code switched even more. The older I've gotten, the more I've code switched, and will use African American language in more situations than what I would have done when I was younger, where I felt like I had to be guarded and protective of that aspect of my identity because it was personal, and so my personal wasn't crossing over into my professional or my public. Those were private things. That was a family thing. That was a familial thing. It was a something that you did with people in love, right? So, or through love. And so as I got older, I just really moved to a, you know what, I can talk how I want. And, you know, having access to that, then African American language, instead of just being something that was familiar, became something of an empowerment thing for me. Mm-hmm. Became, okay, well, I've got this, but are you worthy of receiving it, right? As opposed to, well, I have this thing, but I have to keep it from you because I don't want you to think, you know, badly of me in some way, right? So I remember I was giving a talk at the Modern Language Association, and I was doing my, you know, at that time, my typical, you know, African-American language should be valued. And, you know, it's not for African-Americans to use. It doesn't mean that they're not smart or intelligent. You know, language variation, language differences are just differences. It doesn't indicate a good or bad, et cetera. And, you know, saying all of this stuff kids should have access to be able to use their language in classrooms, and we shouldn't denigrate their language. And so this white guy in the back of the room stands up and is like, well, you're saying all of this, but you're using standard English to say it. What does that mean? Mm. You know, and I'm just like, because, you know, why do you think you deserve to hear me use African-American language? That's not your language. I don't have to share that with you if I don't want to. And I think from that point on, I started thinking of it as this sort of prize, right? But the bottom line is that I have the ability to do that, and not everybody has the linguistic repertoire that I have, and that's okay, but it also doesn't mean that just because I have it that I have to show it off or flaunt it or even hide it. I can do whatever I want to do with it because I'm grown. How I see it. I'm a grown woman.
My girl is preaching, okay? Preaching. She better say that.
Yes. And you know what? And if she was a preacher, she'd be speaking the word right now. Amen.
No. We will be shouting if she was a preacher.
Wow. Okay. Woo! Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So anyway.
That's another episode, Black Church.
No, can we? Okay. After that point, Dr. Lane Hart speaks about some of the issues that happened for those who may have the opposite problem of actually speaking that so-called traditional Black vernacular, especially in the South, which is something that I wasn't expecting to run into growing up.
Because if you look at someone like my grandmother, who was only had a third grade education, or my mom, who did finish high school, but you know, had various hang-ups about her language and her education and things like that. Well, then, you know, they're looking at me as this sort of little spokesman. I sort of look at myself as like Michael from Good Time. He was the militant midget, and I was sort of the linguistic militant midget or whatever. And that's just how I function in my family. And I just thought everything was fine until I got to college and learned, like, oh, wow, you know, Black people don't say, because my first thing was like, well, why do Black people use B so much? That's not how B is supposed to be used, right? And, you know, and then I go to the University of Texas at Austin, and I start learning these things about linguistics. And I'm like, oh, you mean that has a certain function, and it's systematic, and it's not just this random thing. It's not like they're just using it like, you know, sprinkling commas in a paper or whatever. It had a function, right? It meant something. And what was odd about that in reflecting on it is that it's not that I couldn't communicate in African American language, and it's not that I didn't understand people who were using African American language, because I use African American language. But I had this idea in my head like it's just bad, right? It's just bad for you to say that, even though it was my language and it was something that I understood.
Man, I relate to this part of your conversation on a spiritual level because, you know, growing up, my mom didn't necessarily tell me I talked like a white girl, mm-hmm. but I specifically remember one instance when she told me, you know, stop all that Valley girl talk. Mm-hmm. You sound like you're from the Valley, like in California, and that's not how you talk. And, you know, at first I didn't know how to take it. I'm like, this is just me, you know, trying to get through life, you know, trying to code switch and just kind of blend in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the same way for when I go back home in the country. When I tell you that their Southern dialect is so, it's like this whenever you talk and you don't completely open up your mouth and you talk like this every time you talk. And so every time I go back home, they always say, hey, white girl, hey, white girl. And that's not necessarily a compliment for a black woman, but that's a whole nother conversation. But I just feel like it put me in this place of isolation, right? It's like, okay, I don't speak properly enough to kind of navigate in this arena compared to... And then when I go back home, I don't speak black vernacular enough to kind of navigate in that arena. So it's kind of like being in this place of limbo where it's like, damn, like it's like damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Definitely. And so, you know, talking about black vernacular, we also have to talk about, you know, the appropriation of black vernacular.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, definitely. And how people are taking parts of our culture, bits and parts of our culture, and aren't necessarily even using it right or know what it means. So
yeah.
I know you're familiar with Insecure, but I'm not sure if a lot of our listeners are. But on an episode of Insecure, one of Issa's coworkers asked her,
Issa, what's on fleek?
I don't know what that means. I know what that shit means. But being aggressively passive is what I do best.
So, for those of you who don't know, On Fleek was created by Peaches on Vine. She has gotten no money from the word, but it is used everywhere from t-shirts to all of that. So, my question for you, Dalia, is if you were approached with that, like, what does this mean? How would you react?
I feel like that only matters on if I am the only black person in the room compared to... Yeah, I feel like either way I would be offended because there's such thing as Urban Dictionary. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about my hair. Like, if you want to, if you're really curious about black hair, there's a such thing as Google. You Google everything else. Why can't you Google that as well?
I also think it's about intention as well. Like, are you coming from a place that you're really trying to understand,
mm-hmm.
or are you really just trying to, you know, take a bit of our culture? Because I know I had a coworker who was raising a mixed daughter. And so she asked me, like, Jackie, what does it mean, like, when the black family says, like, you had grown? And, you know, I had to explain that to her, which is that's not something you can really look up on Urban Dictionary. That's something that is a part of our culture that I had to explain to her, you know, the early sexualization of girls. But another episode. But so there's this idea called the explanatory comma, which is kind of interjecting information for people who are not culturally competent on the subject. And so it just kind of brings up the question, does it make you feel uncomfortable when people assume just because you're black that you'll understand? But in the end, it could all just be confusing.
You see this in advertising, you know, the hip cool kids are the ones who, you know, I find it interesting. I think now you're seeing it even seep more into these cultural things where you're seeing more white people with, you know, trying to do dreads.
Yeah.
And braids and stuff, right? You know, the whole Miley Cyrus and twerking.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift now trying to do her version of Lemonade. Like, I mean, you know, what I'm saying, it's just like you see all of these sorts of things. And they can do that and be white and they can be successful with that, right? But it's difficult to be black and do this as a mainstream thing. And I just find that the irony of it is just, it's dripping. It's dripping with irony of how that's done. But the appropriation of blackness is not anything new, but it's always this appropriation of, it's this exotic thing. It's this thing I don't really have access to, so I'm going to try to get access to it, and it makes me seem cool. But to some extent, that's also, it's dated in that, you know, is you know, Miley Cyrus can't be trying to twerk at 50 or 60 years old, right? This is a thing that you can do while you're young until you're like 40, and then after that, it's like, yeah, that's just not cool. Not that I thought it was cool to begin with, but I'm just saying, right?
Well, you know, this conversation was good and all, but what about those who may say, well, not only black Southerners have issues with their accents, any Southern dialect is perceived in a negative light sometimes.
Jackie, you have to trust me.
I do.
Luckily, I have the answer for you.
So it's not that I'm unfamiliar with that for white people being mocked for using Southern English. We see that all the time historically in music and film, where the guy who's the white Southern guy is the slow talker, not that smart, right? So there we have particular affiliations that we have or associations that we make with language for people who are white. The same thing for New Yorkers. You know, they're fast talkers, can't be trusted. You know, so there's a variety of stereotypes that we have about this that go across race, right? That white people get some of this and black people get some of this. But for black people, it's connected to everything that's bad. Mm. And there are white, so even for the Southerner, right, who generally is viewed as the slow-witted, slow-talker guy, there are still positive stereotypes with whiteness and Southernness, which is, oh, but they're honest. You know, oh, they're just the salt of the earth, right? So you can have these positive things even while you have these negative things. But there is nothing that's ever viewed as positive about blackness in language. Mm-hmm. Only, I guess, into the extent that it's this reverse thing that in terms of coolness, it's cool to imitate blackness. It's not cool to be black.
I had a great time chopping it up with Dr. Lane Hart. It was a really great conversation. I think that this is something that a lot of people aren't really thinking about on a regular basis, especially when it comes to accents, right? You know, we feel kind of anxious and we kind of feel weird in these kind of environments, especially when you're the only, and especially when you're in an intellectual environment and you have all these multifaceted layers on top of each other. But
definitely.
Jackie.
But wait.
Yes.
Before you get into that.
Yes.
We have to backtrack a little bit.
Yeah.
What does chop it up mean for people who don't know?
Oh, my God. Chop it up means, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
Just talk, you know.
What are some other slang words that you think you use?
I think that I use bop because I always find
me a
good bop.
Yes.
Oh, I love. Yes.
I overuse the word bop.
Yes. What about you?
I think a lot of my slang words derive from like specifically black gay culture. So I use a lot of sis, read, you know,
yes.
Stuff like that. Like,
wait, okay.
Not stealing at all from their culture because I give homage to it and I know where it came
yes.
from. But yeah.
Oh, well, for you, do you use sis in a negative sense or a positive sense? Because I feel like when people call me sis, I get really offended.
Oh, no. It depends because you know how sometimes when I talk to you, I say, hey, friend.
Yes.
You know, if I'm talking to some other people, I may say, hey, sis. Like,
yeah.
That's the way I say
but
it.
I feel like,
but I can be shady.
I know you
like,
can.
Oh,
and I feel like for our friendship, I don't deserve 3 letters. I better get the whole 6 letters.
Oh, friend. Hey, friend. And that's why I say hey, friend to you.
Thanks. But Jackie, you know what? I couldn't end the conversation with Dr. Lane Hart without asking one more pressing question. How do you feel about Beyoncé?
Beyoncé is Queen Bee, right?
Well, do you
like,
get offended?
Get
do you get offended? I get offended when people make fun of Beyoncé's Houston accent.
Yeah, this was interesting, especially in Lemonade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where this really comes out. I mean, to me, in listening to Lemonade, I just grew all sorts of respect for her connection to her roots.
Mm-hmm.
That she just came out and just like, you know.
She said, here you go. I'm going to slap you in the face with it.
Yeah. You know, I want a brother with a Jackson 5 nose. Like, it's amazing. I can't, you know, that's a whole other conversation talking about Beyonce's Lemonade. But I really do like Beyonce and what she's doing.
So, I mean, Dr. Lane Hart basically got our tag of approval. You know what I'm saying? She's pretty cool. She likes Beyonce. I feel like anyone who loves the queen and the almighty of all is pretty good in my book.
I already told you that all black educated women love Beyonce. If you don't like Beyonce, there's
yes.
something wrong with you. She
there
represents
is.
Everything good in this world. She just
exactly.
dropped a bilingual song, so...
And you know what? Usually there's no room for judgment because this is a safe space. But when it comes to Beyonce, nobody's hairline.
You're either in or you're out.
You're in or you're out. Your wig is not safe. Jackie, I challenge you to an accent off.
A what?
An accent off.
You're going to have to explain this to me.
Okay, so basically, you know how like different dialects and the way that we speak, you know, we have different pronunciations of things, especially in Texas because it's so
big,
you know, different parts of it, we pronounce certain words a little differently.
Definitely.
So I challenge you to kind of compare.
Okay.
You know, the way that we pronounce words. So do you want me to go first?
You can go first, yes.
All right. How do you pronounce the word aunt?
It depends. So if I'm talking like not about someone specifically, then I'll just say like, oh, that's like my aunt or whatever. But if I'm talking specifically about a person in my family, I say my Aunt Tina.
See, I say Ainie.
Ainie.
My Ain.
Okay, Ainie. See, I have a nephew now and I want him to call me Ainie.
Oh my God, Ainie.
It's just Aunt I remember, Ainie, all of them.
I remember one time me and this guy weren't supposed to be talking in like elementary. And so I tried to write him a note. For some reason, I was talking about my aunt and I tried to I tried to write the word Ainie out and it did not work. Oh, and he was like, what is this? I didn't know how to spell aunt at the time. I didn't know that aunt was the proper term.
That's what that East Texas education will get you, child.
Hey, you know what? What you will not do. I'm sorry that we all can't be bougified and sedidified.
Yes, because I went to private school. But
my God.
How do you pronounce meddling? Meddling.
Okay, so you always say in the country meddling.
I say meddling.
Why you always meddling?
Huh? I say meddling.
You say meddling?
Mm-hmm. Like you meddling in somebody's business.
You meddling. Why you always meddling?
A busybody.
So wait. Exactly. No. Yeah, you went all the way back. How do you pronounce water?
I would like a glass of water. Water. Water.
Do you really say water?
Water. No, it's a
D. You say it with a D.
A D.
It's a D. I say water.
Water.
Water. Water. It only tastes good
that's
if
almost,
you say
that's
water.
That's almost Jersey. Water. You know?
Water.
Okay, water. So do you say are not, aren't, or ain't?
I say ain't.
I say ain't, and I try and stop myself so much. Like, ain't. I'll be like,
And it's so funny because you don't even say the T at the end. It's A. So, Jackie, how do you refer to Diane?
So, funny story. My coworker, when she first told me that I had an accent, and I was like, I have an accent? And she was like, yeah, you don't hear it? And I was like, no, because she grew up in D.C., Kelsey, she listens. And so she was like, Jackie, when you're on the phone, you always like, my mama said, and she's like, it's like a mama, like my mama, like
mama,
and she's like, it's
mama.
So country, like the way it comes out to her. But I'm always just like, my mama, like my mama said.
Yes. But that's the way I feel like that is like the pinnacle of Black vernacular, right? It's the mama.
My mama.
It's
the,
my mama.
Her name and, my phone is mother, though.
Yes, or your grandma, or your great-grandma, who is your big mama.
Yeah, mama. I had a mama.
You had a mama.
I had a mama. That was my great-great-grandmother. So, a treasure that we hold near and dear to our heart Texas that, you know, many people may not experience, and I'm so sorry.
Wait, moment of silence.
Moment of silence for all the people who have never had a honey butter chicken biscuit.
Oh my
it's
God.
Just, you know, I'm sorry that y'all have to go through that. You know, it's not there that you guys don't have this or HEB. But Dalia, yes. How do you pronounce, I'll say it properly, Whataburger?
It is Whataburger.
It is Whataburger.
And it is the only way that it tastes good.
Definitely.
Is if you say Whataburger. Well, Jackie, it looks like we have come to an end of this episode. But before we go, we have to share our to and fro moment. And that's when we share something that we want to reflect on or just talk about at the end of the episode. So what's your moment, Jackie?
So, you know, I've had a job for about a month now. And, you know, just being in the job force and entering the job force, this being my first full-time job, it's just kind of recognizing that, you know, number one, like a degree always isn't enough and your experience, you know, speaks for itself. And so I'm very grateful that for the experiences that I've had, because those ultimately got me my job and not even my degree.
Yes.
But also just how unprepared I feel like we are set up as millennials and just as people in general for the job force. You know, no one explains 401k to us. No one explains how to negotiate a job offer. No one tells you how.
I still don't know what a 401k is, but continue.
My coworker explained it to me. You know, I just feel like we aren't fully prepared for the job force. And because of that, you know, that allows us to get into these positions where we're underpaid and taken advantage of because we don't really know our worth. So,
yes.
What about you, Dalia? What's your to and fro?
Wait, first of all, Sister Carter, I just want to say that I really felt the word whenever you were saying it.
It's, ooh, Shut up in my bones.
I'm not about to play with you. I just want to just thank all beauty hair stores and supply shops that cater to Black women out there. Let me tell you, living in Austin, Texas, where the Black population is around 7%, you really don't see yourself reflected on the streets of Austin. So the one time I decide to go to one of the only Black hair stores in Austin, I exchange numbers with not only one, but two Black millennials who were also looking for the same thing. It was beautiful. We talked about hair. We talked about, you know, laying edges. We talked about, you know, what type of weaves, you know, that we wanted for our hair that day. And I felt like we bonded. You know, I walked into the beauty shop as one person.
I came out another.
I am reborn. Hey, to and fro. That's my moment. Amen.
The epitome. Well, thank you guys for listening to To and Fro. We thank you everyone for listening. We hope you love the episode. Be sure to tell your friends and follow us on Twitter at @TheToAndFro and also like us on Facebook. And before we leave, Delia, do you have any words of wisdom for our listeners?
Don't ever eat your chicken before it's fried. Bye, y'all.
What? All right. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Hi, my name is Malia Polk, and I am from Warden, Texas.
My name is Megan Richards. I am from Missouri City, right outside of Houston, Texas, and I am currently living in Harlem in New York City.
I am Avery Braxton, and I'm from Peachtree City, Georgia.
My name is Ashley Roan. I'm from Los Angeles, California, but I currently live in Mesquite, Texas, which is a little suburb in Dallas.